We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or a grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire NFL DFS podcast for week two. I am Scott Jensta, joined again tonight by Derek Van Riper. If you could please rate and review the podcast, we greatly appreciate that. You can find us on the RotoWire football podcast and the DFS podcast. If you enjoy us, if you could listen, give us a positive review, leave some good stars, we would greatly appreciate that. It means a lot for the podcast going forward. Derek, week one was pretty wild. 18 more offensive touchdowns than week one last year. We always say, football starts out weird, but I felt like this was a kind of an offensive bonanza right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick being the highest scoring player of the week was exactly how we drew it up. I think we kind of ignored him completely. I think if we did bring him up last week, it was maybe there's some garbage time production there, but kudos to anybody who threw him out there in a tournament. I mean, if you were bold enough to throw Mike Evans out there, we talked about the struggles that Marshawn Lattimore has presented to him in previous matchups, and they had a huge day and wrecked some people in Survivor along the way, too.
Yeah, I was one of those. It was such a wild week that I had a big weekend two years ago when I finished second in the Sunday Million. I had more points this week on one of my FanDuel teams, and I finished at 9,000th.
Oof. Yeah, it just goes to show, though, every week is a little bit different like that. And, I think with the bigger slates, especially, before you get to bye weeks, I think you're going to have some of your crazy high combinations that are possible.
Yeah, when you have a running back put up almost 200 combined yards and he's 5,000 on FanDuel, kind of the James Conner effect kind of opened up a lot of stuff for people.
It did. And I think it creates some fun debates for this week. Where do we go from here? How much of that was poor weather conditions, how much of that was game script, how much of that was the Steelers trying to show Le'Veon Bell that they really don't need him, just being kind of spiteful. I think that's going to be the big question we have to answer with Connor is, how much do we expect that workload to continue in the weeks ahead, or is it going to be a timeshare at some point in the not-so-distant future? They get the Chiefs, though, so I imagine with that being the highest scoring game of the week based on the over-under, the implied totals, everybody's going to want to go back to the well, at least in cash games on James Conner for another week.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on that game, and we'll save them until we get to that game. But the other guy, Alvin Kamara, there was a ton of James Conner, Alvin Kamara teams. It's funny, we talk about high percentage and chalk and all that. I tell you what, this is one of those weeks where, just kind of going with the obvious plays made a lot of sense. I mean, Kamara and Conner both went crazy.
And the weird thing with Kamara is like, you could look at the same situation this week that we saw a week ago. The Saints are home favorites, nearly 10 points. You could look at the game script and try to talk yourself out of him just based on, hey, they want to back off him if they have a big lead. But I think we have to look at the Saints defense after what happened last week and say maybe they're not the team they were in 2017 on that side of the ball. And if they're going to put up 28, 30, 32 points, whatever it ends up being, Kamara's going to be a big part of that. Like, there's no way around that. He is a focal point in that offense right now. So you got to pay the premium to get him, but it may not be a bad idea, especially if the Browns find a way to keep pace with that Saints offense.
Yeah, and, you know, weird games happen. I mean, you know, Tampa Bay scoring 48, but I watched a lot of that game, and those were the easiest 48 points I think I've ever seen. I mean, every guy was three steps open on passes. DeSean Jackson was 15 steps open on his long touchdown, but every play over the middle, every play down the side, I mean, guys were wide open. It wasn't like Fitzpatrick was dropping dimes to guys that were covered or there were some broken tackles. I mean, these are guys that were running free in the secondary. I couldn't believe how easy the offense was for Tampa Bay. This is not a you know, fluky, you know, couple weird touchdowns or some tip balls. I mean, these are guys that were legit wide open all day long.
Yeah, it just looked like a vintage Saints defense performance in all the highlights I watched, where you're just like, why is the coverage this bad? Why are guys this open? And, you know, Greg Williams is in Cleveland, so it's not Greg Williams anymore. But I was really surprised just at how porous the defense was. Even if they were to lose the game last week against Tampa Bay, I would have thought, you know, okay, 27-24 or something kind of close, late field goal maybe for the win. But it seemed like Tampa Bay just handled them.
They did. I mean, Fitzpatrick looked good, but I mean, he was throwing to guys that any NFL quarterback makes those throws. The other thing stuck out to me, and what's really tough in DFS, what we'll try and tackle is, you know, trying to figure out those mid-range receivers. Getting those guys that really go off is kind of a key. I mean, last week we had a lot of guys that stuck out. Kenny Stills had two touchdowns. Emmanuel Sanders had a big game. He was mid-priced. Philip Dorsett in New England had a touchdown and seven catches. Brandon Marshall, kind of back from the dead, had a touchdown, almost a second one that was called back on offensive PI. It's those middle-range receivers that seem to really separate teams when you look at tournaments.
Yeah, and I think what you want to look at as we head into week two are guys you had pretty high expectations for in that mid-tier that kind of fell flat for one reason or another. If you liked Chris Hogan going into week one, he would ordinarily be the kind of guy that you'd like in week two, maybe because he gets Jalen Ramsey. That changes things a little bit. But I think that's one of the primary week two approaches you can take, is just going after anybody that you liked a week ago who fell flat on their face in the opener for one reason or another. I know you pointed out that Travis Kelce's had some pretty bad games against the Chargers over the years, and on a day where the Chiefs offense was extremely productive, he was barely involved. Like, he's another guy that I'd go right back to the well on this week. Simply because I think that was just an outlier, and you know, there may be some reasons to expect it based on that past history, but I think people are going to be crazy if they're steering away from Travis Kelce this week because he was so quiet in the opener.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that you're in a week two, you kind of just forget a lot of the week one stuff. I mean, stuff that's material and it's changed, sure, you got to look at that. But, you know, if you like someone week one, like you said, I think you go into week two. The other disappointment I would ask you, I was going to ask you about Hogan, but you brought him up. What did you think about the Tennessee offense? You know, a lot of hype coming in, new offensive coordinator, new coach, kind of changing their offense. Marcus Mariota, all the receivers, you know, the thunder and lightning with Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. They fell flat. I watched a bunch of that game late just because they had the lightning and it was the only game left. But, you know, I thought they looked terrible. I was really surprised. I was hoping to see a little more. Maybe it's going to take a little bit of time to kind of adjust and get that offense going. But I was not impressed by their offense.
The only guy who looked good was Deion Lewis. And he was the guy in their offense I was the most skeptical of, not because you know, I didn't believe in what he was doing in New England, but I don't know. I didn't believe, or I don't believe, that it translates perfectly into Tennessee's offense. And it's weird that he ended up just being the guy that did what a lot of people expected, whereas the rest of the offense was atrocious. You know, losing Delanie Walker, I think, is going to be a big deal for them. Whether they add more three receiver sets or what they're going to do to work around that, I think that's going to be kind of something to watch in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, Marcus Mariota had that elbow injury, had to leave. Blaine Gabbert played. I think that made it a lot worse. And I guess Mariota fully practiced on Wednesday with no setbacks. So I'm willing to give them a pass, but this came up during the Superflex auction last night. Some of the guys in the league were chatting about it. Maybe we're getting to that point where if we don't start to see it from Marcus Mariota this year, we just have to give up on him as a legitimate, you know, high upside mid-tier quarterback.
Yeah, that Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston draft suddenly looks a lot different than we thought it would look.
Yeah, it really does. And if Mariota's in the CFL in 2 years and Chip Kelly's calling the shots there and instead of in the Pac-12, then, you know, maybe Mariota will be awesome for, you know, DFS, CFL or something.
Wow, that's not a lot of faith in Chip Kelly doing well at UCLA.
Nah, I mean, I think Chip's going to do fine at UCLA ultimately. But as Mariota goes, I'm just happy he's healthy because I bought him in the Pentathlon Superflex auction last night. Wild auction, which we won't go into detail about that here. But Mariota's exactly the kind of guy that as you look for players who have bottomed out expectations going into week two already, he is on that list for sure. I think he'll be extremely low owned for tournament purposes. It's not an easy matchup. He's home against Houston, a defense that I actually like a decent amount. But if you believe in Marcus Mariota at all, he's a great GPP consideration.
Yeah, agreed there. We'll jump into that game. Anybody else from week one you want to talk about before we start to hit this big Sunday slate?
I mean, Aaron Rodgers in the second half, doped up on some painkillers, throwing seeds on one leg is one of the more ridiculous Aaron Rodgers things I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of Rodgers over the years where he's just exceeded expectations. And this was a case where the offense was sputtering so bad before he got hurt. You know, I mean, throwing out the Deshaun Kaiser series, you know, I'm looking at Rodgers and I'm wondering how he did that. And I'm wondering how badly he's still hurt. I mean, I think that's actually a part of the conversation that hasn't really taken place yet. And it might not be able to take place until we know more about what he's able to do over the course of the week.
Yeah, everything I've read is sounds like he's pretty sore these first three games, but I think it's pretty sure he's going to play. But going against Minnesota, I mean, I watched that Niners-Vikings game as being as a Niners fan, and that front four in Minnesota, they get after you pretty good.
Yeah, they look nasty, and I think we were right to steer away from Garoppolo and most of the San Francisco offense in week one, but they get a huge bounce-back opportunity, you know, going back home and playing a Lions team on Monday night that looked horrendous.
Ooh, they looked bad.
It's the typical Belichick coaching tree fallout, right? It never it never works.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm willing to give up on it yet, but they didn't look ready. They looked bad. That was ugly. I mean, I was and they got a pick six to start the game too against Sam Darnold. You know, you're like, all right, here we go. They're going to roll this game, and all of a sudden, 48-10 after that. And I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, had no sense that was going to happen. I was concerned about the Lions in so much as like my dad asked me about them as a survivor pick, and I was like, no, you grew up a Lions fan. You were a Lions fan for 30 years. You know better than to use the Lions as survivor in week one. So I hope he took my advice, but I also didn't, I didn't actually think they would lose, let alone get blown out.
Yeah, that was definitely the biggest surprise of the weekend. But let's jump into week two, first game on the slate. We've got the Indianapolis Colts heading to Washington, washing off an impressive win against the Cardinals. Redskins are favored by 6. Over-under is about a middle-of-the-road one here, 45.5. Starting on the Indy side, what'd you think from seeing Andrew Luck play for the first time in a year and a half?
Thought he looked pretty good. I mean, there were a few mistakes sprinkled in, but generally he looked kind of like vintage Luck. And right now you're getting him at a price on FanDuel, $7,500. That's a bit below what peak Luck was going for. So I see it as a viable cash game play. I think tournament-wise, ownership won't be crazy high either. So I think he can play in both formats. And until the price on Luck and T.Y. Hilton ticks up, I think they're going to be a combo that you look at on a pretty frequent basis.
Who else? What else do you think about this offense this week? Obviously, you know, T.Y. Hilton may have some of that Josh Norman coverage. I always like Hilton a little more at home or on turf. They're at Washington this game, so I'm a little off him just because he's usually a better home play. Is there anybody in this offense that you're thinking about rostering on a bunch of teams?
Staying away from the running backs completely. If you're going to go away from Hilton, there's not really a second receiver I like, but I would be okay with paying up for, you know, Jack Doyle or Eric Ebron maybe in tournaments. I'm still kind of curious, like week in and week out, if there's going to be consistency with how those two guys are used or if they're just going to drive us crazy time and time again. But the prices are reasonable enough on both, and tight end's kind of a dumpster fire. So I think Doyle and Ebron are in play for me, but I like them a little more in tournaments than in cash games.
I was surprised when I looked that Jack Doyle had 40 more snaps than Ebron did.
So I wonder if that's just a blocking thing where Ebron's not going to be out there in blocking situations. Yeah, I mean, like, I sometimes think we get misled by snap counts for tight ends because sometimes they're out there and they have no intention of running anything that resembles a route. They're just there to help block.
Yeah, he did have 10 targets, so he was pretty good on the offensive side, too. I mean, I think that Luck, we saw a little bit, not quite throwing downfield as much as he usually does, you know, probably trying to get back into a little rusty. You know, Doyle's kind of a nice underneath option for him. The other guy that I kind of like at 4,900 is Ryan Grant. Ryan Grant had 9 targets week one. They were really throwing the ball to him a lot. 4,900 is super cheap on FanDuel. He should avoid Josh Norman. I imagine Norman will cover Hilton most of the time. If you're looking for a kind of a punt wide receiver, I think Ryan Grant at 4,900, especially in a tournament, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that actually is pretty interesting logic. I like him a little more in a full PPR setting like DraftKings, but that price is low enough on FanDuel where he would be in play if you're kind of buying the Hilton getting shut down by Norman thing. I think Hilton's one of those guys, though, that when he matches up against a physical, you know, top-end sort of corner, he's so fast that if you try to jam him off the line and you miss, he torches you for that big play, and it snowballs sometimes from there. So I'm a little less worried about Hilton going up against Norman than I would be, a 6'1 guy that's like a 4'5", 40, slower off the line type receiver that, you know, we'll see Norman match up with time and time again.
So what about the Washington offense? You know, we weren't sure what we were going to get from Adrian Peterson, but he was used, to a huge degree, 26 carries, 2 catches. They were leading the whole game, so that helped. The game script was really nice. He got that all in 42 snaps. So whenever he was in, he pretty much was touching the ball. But Chris Thompson also played 33 snaps, had 5 carries and 7 targets. The two guys went crazy, but I wonder if they're going to be kind of tough to time in DFS.
I think so. I think Chris Thompson's role is kind of similar to what we've seen for most of his time in Washington, where some weeks he's going to break off those longer catches, he's going to find the end zone. Most weeks he won't. I think that keeps him often in the tournament consideration bucket as kind of a PPR sort of specialist, and that always steers me more towards a guy like Thompson when the price slips on DraftKings, and I often steer away from a player like that on FanDuel just because of the way he gains that production. I don't know what to make of Peterson. I just figured he was done. He didn't look all that good last year. Short of that debut with the Cardinals a year ago, they gave him the heavy workload, cranked out like 130-plus yards. I just thought more often than not, he just looked his age. And he, along with Frank Gore, made me look a little bit stupid in week one. Now, I don't think the Colts' defense is anything special, so I don't have any apprehension about using Peterson at 6,700. I don't know if he makes the cut for me because I don't play usually more than 3 or 4 different lineups. So I think that's where he probably falls a little bit short. But there's nothing wrong with that play if it's one that you want to build around.
What about the Washington pass offense? Anything here you like? Jordan Reed looked pretty good, looked pretty healthy. You know, he played less snaps than Vernon Davis, but another situation where, you know, he was involved in the passing offense whenever they were using him. He did get 4 targets, caught a touchdown. Jordan Reed, 6,200, probably a little too expensive for compared to the other tight ends. You look at Kelce and Ertz, they aren't that much further away from Reed. I think there's just other guys in that range I like more.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think the receivers might present a little bit of value. I'm not really into an Alex Smith stack situation, but if you want to get a discounted Jamison Crowder out there, he's only 4,900 on DraftKings. Like him a little bit more there because I look at him as more of a poor man's Jarvis Landry type in terms of how they use him. But at that price, I think you can sneak him in there against Indy and end up getting, you know, 12, maybe 15 points this week.
Cool. Moving on to the next game, we got the Carolina Panthers headed to the Mercedes-Benz Dome to face the Falcons. Falcons are favored by 5.5. Over-under is 44.5 in this game. Probably a little lower than anticipated based on kind of how these teams played the first week. What do you think here? Let's start with the visitors. Start with Carolina. The Atlanta D was good against Philly, but I tell you what, they lost Deion Jones and Keanu Neal, starting safety and a starting linebacker. They're both really good players. That's a brutal week one for the Atlanta defense.
It is. I think it changes everything about your expectations for the Falcons until they prove otherwise with the guys that have to step in and fill those voids. Greg Olsen is out of the picture for a few weeks. You know, re-injured the foot in week one. If this goes as expected, you think about the Falcons being nearly a touchdown favorite some places. The Panthers are throwing a lot. I think Christian McCaffrey gets a ton of work. I like the setup for him quite a bit. So McCaffrey's one of those guys that he's not priced up like an elite runner. We saw him get pushed up to the back of the first round in some NFFC drafts at the end of draft season. I think you're getting a nice little discount right now. Cash game play for sure. GPPs, I think he's solid as well because the game script sets up that nicely if the Panthers are constantly playing catch-up. You know, we didn't see a lot of DJ Moore in week one. It just seems like this receiving core is really unsettled, and I think Cam's going to look to the easy short dump-off throws to McCaffrey on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a high percentage play this week. 7,400 on FanDuel, and even more so on DK, where you get the point per reception. But 9 targets last week, 10 carries, super involved in the offense. He did fumble, which caused a little bit of problem, but my only worst issue with McCaffrey is they do seem to mix and match at the goal line. They do a lot of kind of read option, and Cam runs it, or usually they go to Olsen, but obviously he's not there anymore. Maybe kind of big target in Devin Funchess, who was a tight end in college. Funchess was a guy last year that really came on the scene when Olsen was out. He's 6,000 on FanDuel. The Atlanta cornerbacks are pretty good, though, so I'm not super huge on Funchess this week, but I just wonder if he's going to be a target monster at a pretty reduced price right now.
Yeah, 6,000 on FanDuel is fair. 4,700 on DraftKings. I like him.
That's nice.
I like him on DraftKings a lot because of the reduced price, and I still see more of like a tournament sort of play than a cash play because he's the kind of guy that can get 11 targets and still like catch 4 of them for 30 yards. Like it's really weird. Like he should be more of a mismatch nightmare than he has been to this point in his career. But he did flash some big playability at times last year, and I think the key for him, of course, as you said, was the games where Olsen was out is when Funchess was at his best, and they don't really have anybody else stepping up right now. So I do see Funchess being a really nice tournament play at 4,700.
Yeah, worth noting that Cam Newton last year against the Falcons ran the ball well both games, but he threw for 137 yards and no touchdowns in one and 180 and one touchdown in the other. He really struggled in the air against the Falcons last year. That changed a little bit without Deion Jones and Keanu Neal out, but I think at 8,200, Cam's someone that I'm not going to play this week.
Yeah, the price is up pretty high, and I think it makes sense to just run Funchess out there as a standalone or to run McCaffrey out there as a standalone, but I wouldn't go so far as to say either is a must play. McCaffrey close to that, I think, in the full PPR settings over at DraftKings. Funchess is just a guy that I like quite a bit for tournament purposes.
Curtis Granderson just homered for your Brewers in the ninth, by the way.
Excellent.
What about the Falcons side of the ball? They played against the Eagles last week, and I was shocked by how unimpressive Matt Ryan was. And not from a stat aspect, not from anything like that. You know, it's week one. I don't worry about that, but I thought he threw a lot of balls. It looked like, I don't know if his arm was hurt or if his arm wasn't there anymore. He threw a lot of balls that didn't look like Matt Ryan to me, that kind of floated. He missed a lot of guys. I was a little concerned that something's up with his arm as I watched that that opening night game on Thursday.
Yeah, I think you're part of a crowd that believes that, and it's certainly a fair question to ask because he just did not look right. Part of it, too, may have just been facing one of the league's best defenses. I mean, that could always make things look a little bit askew, and the prices are down. I mean, Matt Ryan's 5,700 on DraftKings. The setup is favorable. Carolina's defense, to me, is pretty good or good, but not great, so not one that you fear. And I like the way they used Julio Jones last week. I mean, they went very heavy at Julio. Clearly, Steve Sarkisian values his job in a way where he knows his best chance of keeping it is to make Julio a target monster every single week, hopefully. And even near the end of the game, we saw him get that target in the red zone, just a throw that happened to go out of bounds. So I'm kind of taking the wait and see with Ryan. Not going to avoid him entirely. Not going to pounce at the cheap discount everywhere. But I'm intrigued enough at the low price to think about it. And I think it's affordable, you know, on DraftKings especially. 5,700 is not bad. You could pair him with Julio if you wanted to. I see a little more of a cash game play there than a GPP play there, though.
Yeah, I think I'm going to watch Ryan a week and kind of see what I see from him, just because I didn't like how he looked week one. Interesting play for me. Obviously, Julio's 8,500 on FanDuel, 19 targets last week. I think that it goes without saying that Julio's pretty much a play every week. I worry more about the Carolina run D than I do with the pass D. I think that Julio will be fine. Definitely a great play at 8,500 cash game or a tournament. I'm fine with him there. The interesting guy to me is Tevin Coleman. He's 5,900 on FanDuel. If Devontae Freeman is limited, he came out early of the game with the knee injury. He seems to be okay, but I always worry about knees, especially with a guy like that had some knee issues last year. In PPR, I wonder if full point PPR, I wonder if Tevin Coleman might be pretty interesting because he's definitely a weapon out of the backfield. If Freeman's limited, they may really unleash Coleman, and his price is not adjusted for Freeman maybe being hurt.
Exactly, and I think if Freeman's active, that makes Coleman even more appealing from a tournament standpoint because it might steer some people away, but I share your concern about Freeman. He had knee issues last year. Didn't practice on Wednesday. It's still early. And if he's back out there Friday, it probably means he's going to play. But they could easily back off him for week two or for the next couple of weeks, shift a little more of the workload to Coleman. Coleman being the cheaper of the two ends up being the better play as a result. So I'm definitely with you on Tevin Coleman.
So next we move to your Packers. They are at home this week. They face the Vikings, who are obviously a very, very good team. It should be a really fun game. There aren't a lot of spreads out on this game. I did find one that has the game listed currently as even right now as a pick'em. Obviously, a ton depends on Rodgers and some news coming out this week. And the over-under is, I've seen a 46 and a 47. Obviously, that line will move again based on Rodgers' availability. But let's start with the Vikings side of the ball. I watched a lot of the Vikings game last week playing against my 49ers. I was impressed. I thought that I thought they looked good. Started slow a little bit in the first half, but really kind of really put it together a little bit late. And I thought Kirk Cousins looked good. He dropped a perfect pass into Stephon Diggs. But the guy that I really like in this offense this week is Dalvin Cook, priced way down on FanDuel. He's down to 6,500. He played a ton of snaps. He looked healthy. He played 57 snaps. Latavius Murray only played 14. So he was really involved in the game. Wasn't very effective. He was only 16 carries for 40 yards, but did have seven targets. But you look at last week, Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen were 20 carries for 107 against the Packers. So they were able to run against Green Bay. I think at the price, Dalvin Cook's one of my favorite plays this week.
Dalvin Cook was the first player I clicked in yesterday. I started building up my lineups for week two. I saw that price on FanDuel, and I was like, okay, this is an easy 6,500 call. So because it was so obvious to me, maybe we have to think about fading in some tournaments or at least not having ridiculous exposure across all of your lineups. But, man, I think Dalvin Cook's going to run wild. He passed the eye test last week. The final stats were pretty good, but not eye-popping. And I know they went to Latavius Murray a lot late in that game, but I think Dalvin Cook showed all the burst we saw from him before he tore that ACL. I like what you're mentioning here with the Packers actually struggling a bit against the run with the Bears. I think the Vikings are going to come in with a very good game plan. If Rodgers is compromised in any way, could see this game getting a little bit ugly. I'm kind of surprised that I saw 46.5 over under and the Packers favored by one. Like, that, I don't get that at all. I think Minnesota goes and wins this game somewhat easily. Like, I mean, maybe I'm too much of a pessimist based on how well the Bears moved the ball in the first half of that game on Sunday night, but I think the Vikings are going to go in there and they're going to have no problem getting up and down the field against this Packers defense.
So with that being said, do you have a preference among their receivers? Stephon Diggs is 7,400 on FanDuel. Thielen 7,600. I think they're going to be, you know, tough to figure out which one goes off each week. Thielen was more effective last week. He had 12 targets, six catches for 102 yards. But Diggs was on the score of the touchdown. I kind of like his matchup against Tremont Williams, who I think is like 35. Last week, Diggs saw a lot of Richard Sherman, who looked pretty good. He burned him a couple times. He actually scored the touchdown on the other side of the field, not on Sherman's side. But do you have a preference between the two receivers? Anybody, any edge between those two guys?
I think it's Diggs just because he's a little bit cheaper. I mean, having the extra couple hundred bucks might make a difference, get you up on a better defense or a slightly better flex play or something at the end of your lineup. So I'm going Diggs. I don't think Tremont Williams is the guy we saw 5 years ago in Green Bay. I think there's plenty of evidence to suggest that he has slowed down and that an up-and-coming receiver like Diggs, who could be, you know, a top 10 fantasy commodity by the end of this season, he could torch him in this matchup. So both are playable, but if I'm playing one, I'm playing Diggs.
So on the Green Bay side, it's kind of hard to handicap it without knowing really everything about Rodgers. I'm assuming he's going to play. He's Aaron Rodgers. He tends to get out there. But he's 8,700 on FanDuel. He's going to be expensive everywhere. You know, I love Rodgers. He's obviously awesome. He was fantastic last week in the comeback. But just not a price I'm going to pay for someone going against the Vikings defense, especially not 100% with the way that they rushed Garoppolo last week.
Yeah, I mean, if he were healthy, I'd still be hesitant to pay up
exactly.
for him. So I think it's an easy avoid, even though you'd probably get him at a crazy low ownership rate. It's not the kind of crazy low ownership rate that's a good one to chase this week, given the circumstances. An easy pass for me on Rodgers. With that, I'm probably not playing Davante Adams, not really using the running backs. It's weird. Usually the Green Bay offense isn't one that I'm just scratching off, but I think for the most part, it's an easy avoid.
Yeah, that Minnesota defense is impressive. I think they were at I think Garoppolo had pressure on 50% of his dropbacks, which is just a crazy high number. It was number one in the NFL last week.
Yeah, it everything I saw in that game, it just seemed like he had guys getting in his face constantly.
So going on to the next game, interesting game. We got the Chargers headed to Buffalo. Always wonder with, you know, the West Coast team going east for the early 10 a.m. game. Sometimes you get slow starts, but Buffalo obviously looked horrendous last week. They got absolutely destroyed by Baltimore. Nate Peterman was just a mess out there. They're going to Josh Allen this week, so you know, we're gonna see that for the first time. On the Chargers side, they scored 54 points against the Bills last year when they played, although the game was in L.A. It's hard not to like people on this offense. Just wonder about game script. Only favored by 7.5. Over-under's 43. But Keenan Allen last year, 12 catches, 159 yards, and 2 touchdowns against the Bills. What are you going to do with the Chargers offense? Is there anybody that you're really attacking?
Melvin Gordon's kind of expensive this week on FanDuel. He's 8,200. I could see it in cash games, but I think in tournaments, the ownership rate's going to be high because everyone's going to want to pick on the Bills after what happened last week against the Ravens. If you assume that the Chargers are going to put 25-plus points on the board, Keenan Allen's probably pretty heavily involved. You're not getting much of a discount there. I'd probably take a shot with one of the cheap receivers, Tyrell Williams or Mike Williams again. Mike Williams had the slightly better game last week. I could see the case for Tyrell, even though he's more expensive. I think that actually draws more people to Mike, that he's $400 cheaper on FanDuel this week. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's like they should roll, and I almost wonder if, like, Austin Eckler in tournaments ends up being the the best play in this offense just because of the way I expect everyone to be pretty highly owned.
Yeah, I looked a little closer at Mike Williams because I like what I saw late in the game. But you look at his game log, and they were behind. Obviously, they're trying to catch up the Chiefs. He had 0 targets in the first 3 quarters of the game. Then he had all 6 of his targets in the fourth quarter. So I wonder in a game when they're leading, I just wonder how much work he's going to get. So that concerned me. He's only 3,700 on DK, so he's super appealing there. And, you know, he's a guy that I do like this year. But I was a little concerned when I looked at his game log and all his targets were in the fourth quarter when they were trying to catch up.
Wow, I didn't realize it was all just stacked up late. I may have looked at live scoring on him once, saw a low score, but it was probably earlier in the first half, so I didn't realize it was so back heavy.
Yeah, crazy you mentioned Melvin Gordon. He led all running backs. He had 13 targets last week as they were coming back.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great setup for him. Just Kansas City's going to be fun all year because they're going to create shootouts against a lot of teams.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to see pass-catching backs get tons of work. So that's probably just tipping us off to some future values there. Interesting that Gordon's only 7,400 on DraftKings, so ownership rate will be through the roof there, given the way everyone expects this game to play out.
Yeah, that could be a nice game script for him. What about the Chargers defense? I think at 4,400 at FanDuel, I think they're going to be really popular. Obviously, no Joey Bosa again, although we got a pretty positive report. But 4,400 on FanDuel, I think everybody's going to pick on Buffalo after, you know, last week Baltimore really destroyed them. I kind of think that maybe the Chargers defense, I think they'll be good, but I wonder if they're a little bit of a fade at a super high percentage. I think there might be some other spots that I go to kind of stay away from the chalk there.
Yeah, especially without Bosa. It takes a lot of the teeth out of the pass rush, so I don't know. I mean, Josh Allen making his debut first start is definitely worth picking on. But instead of having the Chargers as your only defense across 5 or 10 lineups, try to get some exposure. If you're going to pay up, the Rams at home against Arizona could be extremely productive. I think the Broncos defense at home against the Raiders makes a lot of sense, too. So there's a few different ways you can go. You don't necessarily have to lock in on the Chargers. And Bosa's absence is a big part of the reason why.
Yeah, I agree there. I think that I will have him on some spots, but I think that they won't be a huge play for me just based on that. The Buffalo offense, they had 153 yards week one. I think I'm just punting on this offense for now. LeSean McCoy was game scripted out early. You know, he didn't do anything, and then they were so far behind, he just didn't really have a chance to do much. But is there anybody in the Buffalo offense or even considering, you know, even in a tournament type play where you're looking for, you know, kind of a low percentage thing? I just don't see anything I'm going with here.
No, and it's because of other players at each position that I just like better. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin's 4,600, but we're going to talk about a handful of other guys that are right around 5K at the position that make a lot more sense. So, yeah, it's just such an ugly situation right now. I'd rather get a look and see if there's any signs of this offense becoming competent with Josh Allen at the helm and then decide later. Because I don't think people are going to flock to this offense if they do put up a respectable performance this week. I think it's going to be a generally under-owned group throughout the season, even if they start getting better results.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think we need to jump on that offense. So I'm going to stay away for now. But next game, we have the Houston Texans rolling into Nashville to face the Titans. Line just came out on this now that the Mariota news came out that he's likely to play. Houston's favored by 1.5. We have an over-under of 45, so kind of a middling range there. On the Houston side, Deshaun Watson, definitely looked like it was his first game in a long time last week. Only a 5.2 YPA against the Patriots. He looked rusty. You know, he didn't look like the same guy we saw last year. Are you concerned at all? Or you just think is that a first game back against Belichick game planning him and you're not concerned?
I think it was Belichick having a lot of extra time and having seen it before.
Yeah.
And I hope that Watson ends up being pretty low owned this week because I think they can have their way with Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee's defense isn't atrocious, at least it's not supposed to be, but Miami had enough success against them last week where I have no hesitation in going out there with like a Watson Hopkins stack. It probably checks in as my favorite cash game stack, much like the Chargers with Rivers and Allen were a week ago. I mean, Watson's 6,300 on DraftKings. Like, oof, that's like really it. Hard to stay away from in cash games.
Yeah, I love DeAndre Hopkins this week. 8,400 on Fando, so he's, you know, fully priced, still up there, kind of off the just the okay game. Like you said, they gave two touchdowns to Kenny Stills last week as a wide receiver, one. In 2017 against the Titans, DeAndre went for 10, a buck 07, and a touchdown, 8 and 80. He had 26 targets between the two games. I think they're going to get him going. I think they're going to feed him. I love Hopkins this week to have a really big day.
Yeah, I think he's among the best plays on the board at wide receiver. If you're going to pay up for one of those top options, often the case, but especially the case in this particular instance. What do you do with the running backs in this game? I mean, they're all pretty affordable. They're all under 7K. Lamar Miller, 6,800 on FanDuel. Titans backs Lewis and Henry are 65 and 6,200. How do you see it kind of playing out? I mean, Miller is clearly the guy in his offense, even though we saw a little more Alfred Blue than expected. I think he scored, so that kind of bumped up the production a bit. But are you interested in any of these backs this week in this matchup?
I think Lamar Miller is probably a decent cash guy. You know, he's going to get the work. He had 20 carries last week, but in a tournament, I just wonder about his upside these days. You know, he's just kind of a solid but boring guy, and I don't know if he's got the upside there anymore. If I'm going to someone, it's probably Deion Lewis. He played 30 more snaps than the Derrick Henry week one. Granted, they were trailing in that game, so they used him a lot out of the backfield. But I just think Deion Lewis is really good. You know, every time I watch him play, he just looks better than people think. You know, he's good carrying the ball. He's good out of the backfield. If I'm going with someone that I think, you know, could really explode and have a big game, maybe score a couple times, Deion Lewis is easily my favorite of all the backs in this game.
You see, like, him in tournaments and in cash games, only 5,000 on DraftKings. I mean, I really like the setup for him over there, getting the full point for every catch.
Yeah, he's probably a little more of a tournament play for me just because he's a little game script reliant. You know, you'd like them to get behind in that game and have to catch up. And with the close spread, I don't know if he's fully a cash play. And, you know, if they get up, they'll use Derrick Henry. But in a tournament, I think he's got a lot of upside, especially with a full point PPR and DraftKings. He's a guy that I do like in tournaments.
Man, Lamar Miller, 5,400 on DraftKings, too. Absolutely. Ooh. A cash game play. I agree with you, though, with Miller, because the problem he's going to run into is a lot like what you have with even, like, like a Jonathan Stewart in previous years in Carolina. You have a guy that can call his own number in Deshaun Watson. He can pick up some of the rushing scores in close, so that chips away at some of the value. It seems like the ceiling is much lower for a player than like Lamar Miller than it should be, simply because he shares the offense with such a dynamic quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he played 7 or 16 games last year, and he had 3 rushing touchdowns. So it's hard to find too much excitement there, but really solid. At 5,400 on DraftKings, you know, solid cash game play. You know he's going to get the volume, knows he's going to get the ball. You got to like that at that price when you're getting that many touches.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we mentioned in the open, Mariota coming off a horrible game. I mean, left early, was dealing with some numbness in his fingers. He was already back practicing fully on Wednesday. Do you throw up the Mariota Hail Mary lineup? And if you do, which of those pass catchers do you want to stack with him?
You know, Corey Davis is the guy that jumps out just because he had the 13 targets in week one, and now Delanie Walker's out, so you got to think the target share is going to be there. There are some reports this week that Rishard Matthews is going to be more involved. I'm not really sure I'm ready to go there. I know Mariota's going to play, and it sounds like everything's all right. I just think when you play one quarterback in DFS, like you said earlier, I don't think I play enough lineups where I'm really going to go with any Mariota lineups. I'm going to watch. You know, I'm a little worried about the elbow. You know, he took that kind of little bit borderline dirty hit where he hurt the elbow that, you know, the guy tackled him about a second after he handed off. But I just didn't like what I saw last week. I didn't like what I saw with the offense. Like you said, Deion Lewis is kind of the only impressive thing. If I'm going to anyone that passing offense, it's probably Corey Davis at 6,300 on FanDuel just based on the target share and with Delanie Walker out. But I'm not really attacking this offense too heavily this week.
One guy I'm watching closely, I want to see how much Jonnu Smith is counted on to fill in Delanie Walker's role. I mean, he's the guy that moves to the top of the depth chart. Will they put anything close to Delanie Walker's target share on Jonnu Smith? If they do, he ends up being a good season-long pickup, but also a guy that immediately arrives as a tournament play. Only 3,100 on DraftKings, so if you want to punt tight end, Jonnu Smith is on that list this week.
And he's a pretty, athletic guy. I don't think they were ready to fully go to him. You know, they were hoping to kind of bring him along, but he's 4,200 on FanDuel. You mentioned the DraftKings price. You know, if you're punting tight end, hard to go wrong with a guy who's starting for sure.
Yeah, it opens up so many interesting possibilities elsewhere with that ultra low price.
It does. So next game is clearly the game of the day, and a really fun game. And I think there's multiple ways to attack this. I mean, you're obviously going to want some part of this game. It's the Chiefs headed to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's favored by 5. Huge over under at 52.5 in this game. You know, after we saw, what we saw from the Chiefs last week, obviously super explosive against the Chargers. Tyreek Hill was everywhere and won people a lot of money in tournaments. Ben Roethlisberger, they had a ton of trouble with turnovers, but still had a lot of yards. You know, he racked up a lot of yards. So did Antonio Brown. Juju Smith played well. Obviously, we mentioned James Conner was crazy. Starting with Kansas City, how are you attacking this game? What's kind of your focus on what you want to go with?
I think Mahomes will be maybe the highest owned quarterback this week on FanDuel at 7,500. So with that, I want to be careful about using him in tournaments and cash games. No reservations whatsoever. If you want to pair him with Tyreek Hill, by all means, go ahead and do it. I think if you're looking to angle for the tournament approach here with the Chiefs, it's Kareem Hunt. I mean, he's coming off a disappointing game last week where the offense was amazing and he put up like 4.9 FanDuel points. He's 7,800. I don't think the Steelers are going to be all that good against the run. They were leaking against the Browns last week, if I'm not mistaken. So you look at this as a pretty good setup for Kareem Hunt. Everyone's going to be more interested in even James Conner on the other side for 800 less on FanDuel and the expectation he's going to get another crazy heavy workload. But I look at Hunt and Kelce, the two disappointments in the Chiefs offense that I liked a lot coming into the season, as the two guys that I'd most like to have sprinkled into my lineups this week.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at Hunt and, it would be, the narrative would be a lot different if they didn't have those two plays from the 1 yard line where they did the little fake handoff and little toss throw that, Mahomes really just dropped the ball into DeAnthony Thomas's hands once and Tyreek Hill's the other time. So Mahomes had the 4 touchdowns, but 2 of them were really handoffs that counted at passes. So I just wonder if, Hunt scores one of those, maybe the narrative's a little different there. I like that too. I don't think a lot of people will have him this week. I think a lot of people were disappointed. I think a lot of people are worried about that Mahomes is not really a check down guy. He's not going to hit him out of the backfield. He's going to throw deep a lot. Pittsburgh did hold Carlos Hyde to 22 carries on 62 yards. So there's a little concern there, but, I actually like this game from a kind of a game stack aspect, not a team stack, but a game stack. I think I want to go like two guys on one side of the offense and a guy on the other side. So if they do turn into a shootout, you're going to get both parts of it. I like something like Mahomes and Travis Kelce mixed with Juju Smith, or maybe you go like a Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, then you throw Kareem Hunt in there. So I think I really want to kind of get the back and forth action of this game if it goes high scoring, goes into shootout rather than just getting one side of it.
Yeah, very much a doable thing too when you look at how the prices break down. And the other guy that's kind of forgotten about and didn't have a good week one is Sammy Watkins. I mean, 5,800 on FanDuel. Is there any GPP interest there for you with Watkins?
I'm not really a Sammy Watkins guy, but yeah, I mean, if you're trying to throw someone in a tournament, you got to think that Pittsburgh, you're going to watch the game film and watch Tyreek Hill a lot. You got to think they're going to shade those safeties over there and try and really shut him down and make them go somewhere else. If that's the case, you get Sammy Watkins one-on-one. Sure, he can beat his guy. Probably not someone I'm going to have a lot of ownership of, but maybe maybe a drop in is a wide receiver 3 in a couple tournaments. But I really like Travis Kelce this week. Like you said, kind of going off the brutal week one, we talked about how he never does anything against the Chargers, and that happened again. He had one catch for 11 yards. Do you have any concern with the Mahomes, chucking it thing? Do you think that he's going to be a guy that throws to his tight ends, throws to his backs? Do you think we're looking at a guy that is always looking 20 yards downfield?
No, I think he's going to throw to everybody. He looks every bit a complete quarterback, and we talked about the crazy like Tech Mobile level throw that he made in the preseason that got everybody really excited. Yeah. But this is a guy that has the arm strength, the ability to move on the run. He can do everything you want a quarterback in today's NFL to do. Ultimately, I think it's a good thing for Travis Kelce. Some people tried to paint that up as a bad thing, but teams are going to game plan to stop Tyreek Hill if Hill keeps burning defenses the way he was burning the Chargers in week one. And eventually, Kelce's going to end up with some easier matchups, less attention as a result. So I think Kelce's going to be fine. I'm not worried about him at all.
Are you going back to Tyreek Hill at 8,100? Do you think you'd be overweight or underweight compared to the field on Hill this week?
I'd be under compared to the field. But, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and talk people out of it. I understand why you'd want to do it. He looks like potentially the most dynamic receiver in the game right now based on some of the things he was doing last week.
Yeah, he does. You look at the Steelers side. Obviously, the Chiefs secondary got lit up by Phillip Rivers last week. They won the game, but he had a ton of yards. Keenan Allen played well, and that included a few bad drops. Tyrell Williams dropped a touchdown, and there was Travis Benjamin dropped a deep ball that was wide open. They could have put up a ton of yards last week against the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a ton of issues last year with wide receivers and quarterbacks. You know, that looks like nothing has changed. Great game script for the Steelers, high scoring both ways. You mentioned Mahomes is going to be the top ownership guy. I think Ben Roethlisberger might be right up there with him. He's only 7,600 on FanDuel. Everybody's talking him up this week. A lot of people like the Roethlisberger with Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster stack. What are you going to be doing with Roethlisberger? He struggled on the road week one. We talked about the fact that he struggles on the road. We talked about how much he struggles in Cleveland. You know, they're kind of playing in kind of half a monsoon last week. I think he'll be popular. What are you going to do with Roethlisberger this week?
You know, you look at some of the other matchups at the quarterback position. We talked about Newton at Atlanta. We'll talk about Tom Brady going on the road to Jacksonville. Rodgers being compromised. Breeze, pretty expensive, top of the list on FanDuel. You have to kind of stay in that middle tier. So I think Mahomes and Roethlisberger are at the top of the list in terms of ownership. And I see Andrew Luck sitting there at that same price, 7,500. I think in a tournament, I'm more inclined to play Luck. In cash games, it's one of Banner Mahomes. I think Ben's a little safer than Patrick Mahomes at this point, but it's splitting hairs. I mean, as long as that elbow injury doesn't keep him out all week from practice, I think he'll be fine from a health standpoint. And that Chiefs defense is really the gift that keeps on giving because it makes the offense put up ridiculous numbers, but it also leaves another team to pile up big stats against them week in and week out.
Do you have a preference at all at wide receiver? Are you going to be playing up for Antonio Brown? You want to pay down a little bit for Juju? What do you feel with that? Obviously, both with prime matchups against the KC secondary.
I'm looking at Juju at the discounted price relative to Brown at 7,200 and having a really hard time staying away from that. So for me, I'm on team Juju this week. I always wonder when Antonio Brown's price is as high as it is, if you're going to end up getting him lower owned than you should in some spots, this is not going to be one of them against the Chiefs. People are going to be all over Antonio Brown because everybody wants to pick on the Chiefs right now.
So we talk about Ben, we talk about AB, we talk about Juju. So what do you do with James Conner? He's priced up a little bit, but still not priced way up. He's 7,000 this week. He had 100% of their backfield touches last week. No one else in the no other Steeler running back touched the ball in the out of the backfield or in a carry. He had 192 yards from scrimmage. You know, you mentioned earlier maybe they're showing Le'Veon Bell that they don't need him. Maybe they're really trying to feed Connor. So what do you do with Connor this week? You got to think he's going to be high percentage again. But if we love the Steelers pass offense, I just wonder. You know, you got to go away somewhere.
He's an easy guy for me to stay away from because I think he will still be very highly owned. I do believe the Steelers were sending a message to Le'Veon Bell with the usage of Connor, but aside from that, conditions in Cleveland were not good for the passing game. It was rainy, it was windy. I think with that, it's going to be more pass happy this week anyway. The Chiefs had the firepower to get up big on the Steelers anyway and really kind of force Ben's hand, make him throw 40, 45, 50 times. So, yeah, Connor catches passes and got 100% of the touch share last week. I just don't expect that to continue. And I think ownership rates are so high that he's an easy fade for me. In cash games, still very much playable. In tournaments, I don't think I'll have James Conner going anywhere.
With the 49ers playing the late game, this is definitely going to be the big screen game in the garage. That's going to be a really fun game.
Oh, yeah. That feels like a possible AFC conference championship game preview. I mean, it could easily play out that way.
Yeah, totally agreed there. Moving on to a game that's not the AFC Championship game preview, we have the Dolphins headed to the Jets. All the Jets did look good. Jets are favored by 3 in this game, which I don't think anybody would have predicted a week ago. Over-under is 44. Not a lot I love in this game. We'll hit it real quick. Kenyon Drake, had a lot more snaps than Frank Gore, but Frank Gore looked good. The Jets run D is pretty solid. Drake's only 6,600, but not someone I'm super interested in against the Jets run D this week.
No, it's a tough run D, and it's also not an offense that you expect to replicate what it did in week one and put the Dolphins in situations where Drake's just catching a ton of passes out of the backfield. The price isn't bad. I have no qualms with the price, but this is a game where I don't know what these two teams are. I think last week that game for me was the Arizona-Washington matchup. This week it's the Dolphins-Jets matchup. I think the Lions are horrible, so that kind of skews my perception of what the Jets might be. And I think that weird game with all the delays, you know, for the Dolphins and Titans just makes it hard to get a sense of what they really are, too. So it is pretty easy game to look away from. think from a tournament standpoint, Quincy Enunwa is going to be really popular. 5,000 flat on FanDuel. Do you play that, or do you say, you know what, that's low-hanging fruit. I'm going to go Robbie Anderson instead and hope that he comes in at a much lower ownership rate at 6,400.
Yeah, my answer to that is probably neither, but, you know, Enunwa did have the 10 targets. Everybody's been talking up on Twitter. He's the big fab pickup at receiver. There's a lot of people who really like Enunwa. I just think I'm going to stay away. I just, you know, Sam Darnold looked pretty good, but not something that I'm, you know, jumping to use his receivers. Isaiah Crowell and Bilal Powell split snaps, pretty evenly. Crowell did have the big game because he broke that late touchdown, but yeah, like you said, this is one of those games I'm probably staying away from. If I had to play anybody here, it might be Kenny Stills, just because I think no one's going to go back to him after the two touchdowns. He's pretty solid when Devontae Parker doesn't play. He's very clearly the wide receiver one when Parker's out. If I was going to go for anybody, it'd be Kenny Stills in the tournament with the thought that nobody's going to buy into two touchdowns again, and he'd probably come in at a pretty low ownership percentage at the price.
Yeah, Parker was limited to practice on Wednesday. We'll see where he's at later in the week, but I'm with you on Stills. I think that makes sense if you're going to do anything in this game, either Stills or Robbie Anderson, but I'm probably just going to have an easy pass on this one.
So moving on, we have the world champs. The Eagles headed to Tampa Bay, which is suddenly an interesting game after what Tampa Bay did to the Saints last week. Philly is favored by 3 on the road, over under 43.5. Philly won last week, but their offense definitely sputtered. Foles did not look good. They only had 232 yards of offense, but this is a great matchup. You know, the Bucks were thrashed by wide receivers last year. None of that changed week one. Michael Thomas went off against them. Drew Brees went off against them, even though they were losing. Game script was great, but you know, the Bucks can't stop wide receivers. Tampa Bay allowed 8.1 yards per play in week one. That seems almost impossible.
I love Nelson Agholor this week, 6,100. He was a target monster last week, brutally inefficient, but that was against an Atlanta defense that was playing pretty well. Mentioned the two guys they lost and how that's going to probably change what happens with that defense in the weeks ahead. But I'm not going to look at Aguilar's lack of production on the 10 targets last week and get down on it. I'm going to get excited about how heavily involved, how heavily targeted he was by Nick Foles.
Yeah, it was funny because he had the 33 yards on the 8 catches. Everybody was bringing up stats of how many times that hasn't happened. But I love the targets, especially in a PPR. You got to like Aguilar at 6,100. The guy I like is Zach Ertz this week, 6,500 on FanDuel. He was only 5 catches, 48 yards, but he did have 10 targets. Tampa Bay was really good against tight ends last year, so that worries me a little bit. They were the second best in FanDuel points against tight ends. But I liked how often they were looking to Ertz. I think he's going to break a couple big ones. Him and Kelce are the two guys I really like this week coming off the poor outings. My two favorite tight ends this week. And I think Ertz 6,500 is going to be a really good play.
Yeah, I mean, the price is affordable relative to Gronk. Gronk has a tough matchup against the Jags, too. So going to the second and third options on the price list make a lot of sense.
What about Nick Foles? 7,300 is a price that he's not going to, you know, people aren't going to punt with him. Any interest in him against this defense that cannot stop the pass?
It would be sneaky, but probably too sneaky. I think if the Eagles are moving the ball, they're going to be balanced. They're going to run it well. I actually thought Jay Ajayi looked pretty good. I don't know why he wasn't playing more earlier in that game, if they thought they could coast and play without him, but I actually came away pretty impressed by how he looked on the runs, not just on the actual scoring output itself. So I look at Ajayi as a guy that people, kind of with the same lens as you had with Kenny Stills, people might be a little bit hesitant to buy into another big game from Jay Ajayi this week. 6,800 is a very solid price for him. I like him a lot in cash games. I don't hate it in GPPs either. I think there's actually a little more of a ceiling there than people realize.
Yeah, I just the Doug Peterson running back usage always worries me for fantasy football. I just, you know, Jaren Sproles played a lot last week. I could see it on Ajayi. I thought he looked good, too. I totally agree with you on how he looked running the ball. I thought he was easily the most effective guy they were giving the ball to. But I just wonder, I worry about the snaps. I worry about the touches. You know, Ajayi probably really needs to be efficient on his carries to work out. But I think I agree with you on the percentage. I think nobody will go back to him this week.
Yeah, they're slight favorites. So, I mean, that helps. If they were in a situation where you thought maybe they could fall behind, you'd worry about it a little bit. But I don't see the Bucks coming out 2 weeks in a row and stunning the league and doing it against a much, much better Eagles defense than the one they saw last week against the Saints.
Yeah, no doubt there. You know, this is going to be a different world for the Bucs going against the Eagles. You know, Mike Evans, he's 7,900. He looked really good last week. I thought he looked as athletic and healthy as he looked in a while. You know, the Eagles D is tough, but, you know, Julio Jones lit them up as a wide receiver one last week. You know, a ton of yards, didn't score, but had 168 yards, 180 yards, whatever it was. Any interest in Evans? I think he'll be he's going to be overlooked in low percentage. Are you interested in Evans at 7,900?
Yes, tournaments only because the Eagles' defense is good, but he's 7,300 on DraftKings. I think it makes them the seventh most expensive receiver over there, and as you said, just under 8K at 7,900 on FanDuel. So, yeah, for tournament purposes, I do like Mike Evans this week. Julio had plenty of separation, too. It wasn't,
yeah, he did.
It wasn't like Matt Ryan was throwing into tight windows. Like, Julio was open
no.
a lot in that game.
Yeah, so if Deshaun Jackson doesn't play, he's in the concussion protocol, but it sounds like the shoulder is actually more of an issue. Any interest in kind of moving over some ownership percentage to Chris Godwin? He looked pretty good last week. He tends to get a lot of targets when one of those two guys doesn't play. He's 6,100 on FanDuel. I imagine he's super cheap on DraftKings. I haven't looked him up there, but any interest in Godwin if D-Jack doesn't play?
Yes, I think that's always going to be the thing that steers me towards Chris Godwin exposure. The absence of either one of Jackson or Evans, anything that bumps up the potential target volume, absolutely opens the door. 4,600 on DraftKings, love him over there at that price. Still kind of lean a little more tournament with him, with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, but I came away pretty impressed by what Godwin did in that opener. And he did it with pretty limited targets, too, just four targets. So I still think it's a little bit risky, but I like it enough to where if Jackson's out, Godwin probably gets into one of my tournament lineups this week.
And, you know, Philly is favored. It's a small spread at -3. But if they get ahead, you know, and Fitzpatrick's throwing the ball a lot the second half, you got to like that. You got to think the Eagles defense is going to shade over on Mike Evans. And Godwin could see a lot of one-on-ones. You know, O.J. Howard in the middle of the field, Godwin on the edge with a one-on-one. I really like what he could do if they get behind in this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there could be a 8-plus target game for Chris Godwin if Jackson doesn't play.
The next game is an interesting one to figure out. The Saints are big favorites again. Obviously, they lost, cost a lot of survivor pools last week as the biggest favorite in the NFL. They lost to the Bucs. Cleveland heads to the Big Easy to face the Saints. New Orleans is favored by 9. Pretty high over-under in this one of 49. First on the Cleveland side, you know, obviously a great game script for the Browns. You know, they're 9-point underdogs in a high-scoring game and should be throwing the ball up. The Saints defense looked absolutely horrendous as we hit on earlier. Tyrod Taylor, 6,600 on FanDuel. He looked bad throwing the ball last week against the Steelers. He did that 77 rush yards, which saved his fantasy day. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick just lit them up. But I just don't know if I trust Tyrod Taylor to throw the ball after how he looked last week. Granted, it wasn't a monsoon. I like his receivers, but I'm not totally sure I can trust him. 6,600 is pretty cheap, though.
It's really cheap. 5,900 over on DraftKings, and you could pair him with one of Landry or Gordon for 63 or 5,800, which makes it an appealing stack, but... You're right. I mean, other than that touchdown run, which was really impressive, by the way, I didn't see anything from Taylor that made me think, oh, this guy's going to keep the job for several weeks. I saw a guy that might keep it for September, and then Baker Mayfield takes over. Yeah. So with Taylor, ordinarily I would be going right at the Saints defense right away in week two. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I don't play enough lineups to where I'm going to be doing it myself. So I'd be more likely to use one of those receivers, Landry or Gordon. Gordon played more than I expected, but Landry to me is so much safer. Only 6,300 on DraftKings. I'd lock him in again in cash game scenarios. I think you do got to worry about the ownership rate getting very high in tournaments.
Yeah, you mentioned the DraftKings prices. They're cheap on FanDuel too. 6,700 for Landry, 6,300 for Gordon. Gordon played 69 snaps on offense, which I did not see coming. You mentioned the playing time. He only had 3 targets, did catch a touchdown. But Landry, 15 targets. And the thing I thought was interesting with Landry is he was used differently than it was in Miami. I watched a bunch of that game because it was so close late, and they were throwing the ball down the field to Landry. You know, Miami was always underneath, always checkdowns, always little slants, always little outs, you know, a lot of stuff within 10 to 12 yards. But they were really throwing the ball deeper to Landry, which I like to see. He's got great hands. You know, the ball's there, he's going to catch it. I really like the upside with Landry just based on the fact they're using him differently.
Yeah, I kept thinking maybe they would use him more like Antonio Brown was used in Pittsburgh, since Todd Haley went from Pittsburgh to Cleveland this offseason and took over that Browns offense. So I think it leaned more in that direction. But I think even the more I think about that statement, the more I hate it, because Jarvis Landry isn't Antonio Brown. He's an extremely talented receiver in his own right. But it's nice to see him getting downfield more often, because you know, whether it's Taylor, whether it's Mayfield, the Browns being aggressive, that makes Landry a potentially more efficient player if he's hitting some big plays that he previously didn't even get the opportunity to hit in Miami.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you on that. Landry's going to be very popular. Under 7,000 on both sides, he's going to be a really popular play. I wonder if that moves me on to Josh Gordon. Obviously, a ton of upside with Gordon. You wonder, the three targets look concerning, but he played a lot, which I like. He's going to be way lower percentage than Landry. I think he's really interesting to me, especially in a tournament play.
Yeah, I think tournaments only for Gordon if you want to use him. David Njoku is probably more of a wait and see. Could be a punt play at tight end, but you know, you look at guys like Vance McDonald, Jonnu Smith, Charles Clay at the same price point on DraftKings. There's not much that separates Njoku right now from those guys, and they're all kind of questionable in terms of how many targets they're going to get. So I don't see any overwhelming reason to, you know, steer heavily towards Njoku out of those cheap tight ends.
So if the Saints score as I think they will, any interest in Duke Johnson kind of as an off-the-radar play? If they're trailing, you know, on DK you get full-point PPR, I wonder if they're checking down to Duke Johnson a lot in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Duke Johnson's a lot like Chris Thompson for me, where we know he's not going to carry the ball a lot, but when the setup works in a way where he's constantly on the field, he finds a way to make value, and I think the price is very low in most places, 4,200 on DraftKings. He's another one of those guys. He's built for DraftKings, like the full PPR setup, kind of like James White, Chris Thompson's in that same mold. I could throw him in the flex at 4,200 this week in tournaments and feel pretty good about it.
I was going to say, he feels like a really good flex play for me on DK.
Yeah, but still tournaments only. I mean, I think even with his defined role, that offense is still quirky enough or unknown enough where I don't trust him in cash games quite yet.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So on the Saints side, last week we talked about, we were a little worried about the game script and them getting up to too big a lead. Obviously, the opposite happened. They were behind and had to throw all day. Drew Brees looked really good and, you know, kind of back to the days of, you know, what if their defense is awful again? He starts to put up huge stats. The Browns gave up 335 yards passing to Pittsburgh last week in that poor weather. So obviously the pass defense is not especially good. Michael Thomas went crazy last week, 17 targets, had a touchdown, had a lot of yards, had, I think, 16 catches on those 70 targets, which is crazy to think about. And the one target he didn't catch was right in his stomach on a third down that he dropped. Are you going back to Brees Thomas this week? Do you think the game script's going to turn out differently? Where do you fall on the Saints this week?
I'd play Thomas, but not Brees. Brees being at the top of the price list on FanDuel, 8,800 is too steep for me. Thomas is very safe. I have no problem paying the premium for him. If you want to go away from Antonio Brown and you want a guy that you know is going to be heavily involved. And part of what I like about Thomas right now is that, you know, Cameron Meredith missed a lot of time during camp. He's not really contributing yet. Ted Ginn, you know, made a big play last week and has that kind of ability to kind of come and go in this offense. And it's just a group of receivers behind Thomas that I don't feel that good about right now. Traquan Smith, the rookie, if he were getting on the field more, I think could be pretty interesting. But, I'm looking at this situation here, and I just think that Michael Thomas will continue to be a target monster early in the season. I think it's down to the Thomas and Kamara show every single week for the Saints offense.
So you mentioned Kamara. He's 9,000 this week on FanDuel. You know, he's one of those weird guys where game script can actually work, you know, he's in his advantage both ways. If they're ahead, they hand the ball off to him, although they're not going to lean on him big time. They don't want to get a lot of work for him. But, you know, he gets the ball in the second half of their leading. But if they're behind, suddenly he's getting a ton of passes too. So he's one of those guys that we have a lot of running backs that come out on third down, or running backs that if they're behind, we worry about game script. Kamara's kind of game script proof right now, which is, you know, it's scary to think about, but he only had 12 targets week one, didn't run the ball great, but James Conner thrashed Cleveland last week, as we've talked about earlier. It's hard to find a reason not to play Kamara aside from the 9,000 price tag.
Yeah. How many lineups do you think you're going to have where he's in it though, at that price?
Yeah, probably, you know, if I play five, you know, he'd definitely be in one of them. You know, I don't want to totally fade him. If I pay 10, to be a couple. So probably about 20% of my lineups, I think, is there. And, you know, at 9,000, I think it's probably going to be his percentage. He was, I saw a couple tournaments, he was 35% last week. You know, he was priced down a little bit less, but he's just so good. And without Mark Ingram there, you know, I worry about the carries. He had, you know, he only had 29 yards on 8 carries last week, but 2 touchdowns, 112 yards receiving. It's hard to find reasons not to put Kamara in your lineup at all, ever.
Yeah, 9,500 over on DraftKings. I think your exposure rate, though, makes sense. I mean, there's enough cheap punt plays still on the board everywhere to offset the price when you want to do it. but
right.
It's hard to build four or five lineups you like with a guy that expensive locked into them.
Yeah, it is. It's tough to build around, especially in DraftKings at 9,500. That really takes a lot of your cap. You're going to have to play some guys in the fours for sure. But, you know, really good. He's obviously really fun to watch. But what do you think happens in this game? Do you think Cleveland hangs in, or do you think New Orleans is going to be pissed off and just blow them out?
I think the Saints are going to blow them out. I'd be really surprised if they drop two at home. Actually, if you didn't use them in week one in Survivor, I think they're actually a really good Survivor pick this week.
Well, I used them in week one, so that doesn't really help me very much.
Unfortunately, yeah, you did. But, you know, the pentathlon's got two strikes. Can't go to the same team twice. But, yeah.
Did you have Baltimore?
Yeah, I went Baltimore last week.
Nice. Yeah, I went back and forth between those two. And once Peterman was named, it was kind of silly not to go Baltimore. I was buying into the, you know, Tampa Bay's got their backup quarterback too. But Fitzpatrick is a pro and Peterman probably isn't.
No, unfortunately, Peterman actually looks like he's going to be headed north of the border in a year or two.
You like those CFL guys?
I do. I like sending people to the CFL, actually. That's like kind of my favorite thing to do.
So moving on to the biggest favorite of the board, we have the Cardinals headed to the Coliseum to face the Rams. Rams are 12.5-point favorites coming off their 20-point win against the Raiders in Oakland on Monday night. Over-under this game, 45.5. You know, Rams' biggest favorite on the board. On the Arizona side, you know, you got to like a game script where, you know, they could be throwing the whole second half. Are you on a Larry Fitzgerald play here? Any Ricky Seals-Jones love? What are you doing with the Arizona that look really bad last week against the Redskins?
Fitz is only 6,000 on DraftKings, and they may have to throw it 45 times, even if they don't want to. So that bodes very well for him. So, yeah, I'm definitely in on Fitzgerald, especially in cash games. This line seems a little bit bigger than it should be. I know the Cardinals look bad at home against Washington. I don't know. New coaching staff, new quarterback, lots of changes there. So that they were terrible maybe shouldn't have surprised me as much as it did. I thought with David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald being the focal points of the offense, they could move the ball against a team like Washington. I was wrong about that. But the discounted price on Fitz right now, absolutely worth paying for. David Johnson's 8,200 over on DraftKings. You look at the price over here on FanDuel, he's sitting at 8,400. He's got a back injury. I don't think it's anything too serious. Limited on Wednesday. But kind of wonder if he checks in with a really low ownership rate this week because of how terrible that offense looked in the opener.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I mean, we talked about Kamara earlier, and there's going to be a lot of people playing him. And, you know, Melvin Gordon, maybe a bunch of ownership at 8,100. But The thing with Johnson is he only had 9 carries last week, but did have 9 targets. So I wonder if, you know, if they fall behind, he might be an interesting DraftKings play getting a bunch of targets. I just find there's other running backs I think that I like situations more this week, especially on the high end.
Yeah, again, we have that luxury with no bye weeks. There are so many games on the board. You can take the wait and see with teams and situations that you're not sure about, and that might be the appropriate way to go with the non-Fitzgerald Cardinals. I mean, that price, $6,000 on DraftKings, is a gift.
Yeah, the only guy that I do like aside Fitz is Ricky Seals-Jones. He saw 6 targets last week, and the thing I like is that they were behind the second half. They really looked at him. He had 5 targets in the second half alone. He even had a short hop in the end zone that Bradford made a bad throw that should have been a touchdown. I think if you're looking to save a little money at tight end, he's 5,200 on FanDuel. He's much less on DraftKings, I believe. I think he's an interesting game script guy that at tight end, if you're looking to kind of save off the Kelsey and Ertz and Gronk, I think he's an interesting guy that will be low-owned and did see a lot of action when they were behind last week, which I think they will be again this week.
Yeah, for tournament lineups, we're using Kamara, Ricky Seals-Jones, 2,900 on DraftKings.
Oh, goodness.
He helps get you to the Kamara line if you need it.
Yeah, that's someone I'm definitely going to be using in DraftKings. 2,900 is way too low for a guy who was really involved in the second half last week.
He's a freak, too. I mean, like I think he's a better player than people realize, and it's a bumpy offense, but if they're throwing 40 times, it can't just be all Fitz and David Johnson. Someone else has to step up, and Seals-Jones is probably the next option. Maybe Christian Kirk eventually becomes that guy, but especially in the red zone, you can see Seals-Jones maybe making an impact if the Cardinals are able to sustain a drive that long.
So the Rams offense, you know, I tell you, when you watch this offense, and you really marvel at how good Sean McVay is. He puts Jared Goff in so many good spots to succeed. I mean, he just puts him in positions where he's making easy plays, making easy decisions. You know, Jared Goff's good, but, you know, McVay is his coach really helps a lot. But Todd Gurley's, you know, the play this week, $8,900 on FanDuel, so really expensive. But he did average over 150 yards from scrimmage against Arizona two games last season. Arizona gave up 161 yards rushing last week to Peterson and Thompson, and 133 yards receiving to Peterson and Thompson. They got absolutely thrashed by running backs, almost 300 yards between the two out of the backfield and carrying the ball. And they had two touchdowns. Gurley's hard to go away from this week. You just wonder if they get up, maybe they kind of ease off the gas. But he's so good. He's so involved in every play. They kind of build every play, you know, based on what Gurley is and where he's going. They kind of build that offense around him. I think I'm going to pay up at 8,900. Gurley's one of my favorite guys this week.
Similar to Kamara, where if you got five lineups, he's only in one, though.
I think I'll have more lineups with Gurley than Kamara. I think Gurley outscores Kamara this week.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, so with Gurley, I mean, yeah, he's the focal point of the offense. The receivers are very affordable on DraftKings. Looking at the price over on FanDuel, it's $7,000 on Cook, $6,500 on Woods, $6,300 on Cooper Kupp. I think Cooper Kupp at $6,300, being the cheapest of the bunch, is probably the most interesting. Maybe that drives up the ownership rate a bit, but it's because he'll be lining up in the slot more. I think Patrick Peterson might be seeing a lot more of Brandon Cooks. So I think that's where I'm looking at maybe Kupp and Woods as the pass catchers I'd like. But the major problem you have here, it's a very lopsided line. And yep, if it plays out the way you expect, it is going to be a lot of, you know, Gurley running the ball throughout the first three quarters, and maybe even like a John Kelly or a Malcolm Brown or one of the backups piling up all that work really late. So if you're buying the Vegas line on this, I think you're right to just concentrate on Gurley and to maybe just stay away from the other pass catchers in the Rams offense.
I did like how they used Brandon Cooks. He was way more involved in the offense than Sammy Watkins was last year. He had eight targets. He had two pass interferences on deep ball, so he could have had a big game. He moves around a lot, so I think that they'll make sure that Patrick Peterson won't shadow him. I think if I had to go with a receiver from the Rams, I think I'd go with Cooks, who I think will be lower owned at a higher price than Kupp, and I think he might be a little sneaky as a low percentage guy, but you're going to need it in the first half because I don't think he's going to be catching too many balls in the second half.
Yeah, I hate relying on that. The early strike.
I know, me too. You know,
like, it's just not ideal, but the logic certainly makes sense.
And the Rams defense is a play I like a lot this week. Coming, if you want to come off the very popular Chargers, the Rams defense, I think, last year they had 9 sacks and 4 interceptions in 2 games against the Cardinals, including a shutout against them. So I think the Rams D has a really good pivot off the Chargers if you want to avoid some of the ownership there. Rams D is probably my favorite play this week.
Yeah, I mean, they're 400 more expensive at 4,800
yep,
on FanDuel,
yep,
only 100 more than the Chargers on DraftKings. A no-brainer on DraftKings to go with the Rams.
Yeah, and I think the elevated 400, people love to save money at defense. I think that that'll take some of the ownership off the Rams and put it on the Chargers.
Yeah, I agree.
Moving on to the 49ers home against the Lions, who are coming off the egg-laying against the Jets. 49ers are favored by 5.5. Over-under is 48. Starting on the Detroit side, I think I'm going to wait and see on Matt Stafford. I did not like what I saw last week, but the three Lions receivers, you know, they're playing a lot of three wide receiver sets. They don't run the ball a lot. They don't have a ton at tight end. Luke Wilson, I don't even caught a ball last week. Do you have a favorite among the Lions receivers? Because it's a pretty good game script. If the 49ers do score some points, the Detroit's going to definitely throw the ball. I think Kenny Golladay at 5,700 is going to be really popular. I think everybody likes him as kind of the sexy play. I'm moving up to Golden Tate at 7,100. I like the 15 targets last week. I think I kind of like him as a pivot off Golladay, who I think is going to be really highly owned.
Yeah, I think Tate is a lot like Jarvis Landry, where it's like, I don't love the offense, but his role in it seems so clearly defined. The price is still good. Only 6,500 on DraftKings, so you can use them on both sites. Works well in cash. I don't think the ownership gets so high that you can't use them in tournaments. He's just one of those guys that people think is kind of old and boring, and I don't know. I think he's extremely productive, so I do think the setup is a very good one. I have no idea what they're going to do in that backfield in Detroit. Like, I have no sense for what the week two distribution of carries and touches is going to look like for those backs.
Yeah, I'm not even touching that backfield now. But, Adam Thielen had a lot of success out of the slot against the 49ers last week, and that's where Tate will be. You agree with me? Do you think Golladay will be pretty popular?
A little bit. I mean, I think he's that big, fast guy that everybody wants to see break out. So that's going to happen. Maybe that makes Marvin Jones the unheralded second receiver, even though it's a trio where people are paying up for the cheaper guy. But I'm looking at this, and I'm just saying it's Tate or bust for me. And, if I have five lineups, Tate's probably in at least one, maybe in two of them.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think 5,700 on FanDuel Galladay will definitely be a popular play there. 12 targets last week. It's a good game script. But looking at the 49ers, I think that the running backs kind of seem 50-50. Alfred Morris had 34 snaps. Matt Breida had 30. Kind of a pass for me in DFS. You know, even with a good game script, I just don't know who's going to be getting the carries. But I do like a stack this week with Garoppolo and George Kittle. I really liked how Kittle looked last week. 9 targets. He even dropped a big ball. He could have had a really huge game. If Marquise Goodwin is out, I think that Garoppolo Kittle could be a really interesting stack in this game.
Yeah, I do like the idea of going to a Garoppolo stack. Yeah, Goodwin being banged up really pushes Kittle up the list. Garcon, I mean, what do you think after watching him last week? Is there anything left in the tank?
You know, they went to him a lot. They were really using him a lot. I thought he had 4 or 5 balls, maybe 3 or 4 balls that he should have caught. They were tough plays, but, you know, he got hit. He had one in the end zone that was in his hands. I was a little concerned based on the fact that I thought he dropped 3 or 4 balls that he usually catches, would have caught early last year before he got hurt. I do like that they went in him a lot. They threw the ball a lot to him. Obviously, Goodwin was out, so that helped. But I was a little concerned by I didn't think he played very well.
Yeah, I didn't see as much of that game as you did. Had that running kind of simultaneously with red zone, and I didn't see anything that stood out in a positive way from Garcon, but definitely want to make sure I didn't miss anything there. Kittle is really cheap on DraftKings. You want a Garoppolo Kittle stack on DraftKings, it'll cost you almost nothing. Kittle's 3,800 this week over there.
That's too cheap for how active he was, especially on balls down the field last week.
I think he'll be somewhat chalky in tournaments.
I do too.
As a result of that, so keep that in mind if you're playing over there and you're trying to use that combo on DraftKings.
Yeah, he's 5,600 on FanDuel, so I think that helps the percentage a little bit, especially with Kelce and Ertz price down this week. But if Goodwin doesn't play, Dante Pettis is an interesting kind of wide receiver 3 punt. He's 4,000 on DraftKings, 4,500 on FanDuel. Once Goodwin was out, he had 4 targets in the second half, 4 or 5 targets were late. He looked pretty good, too. He's an explosive guy. He returns punts, too. You know, he's really explosive at the University of Washington. He's a rookie this year. He's an interesting guy. I wonder if Goodwin's out, if, you know, maybe he gets a little bit chalky, but I think that enough people will be on Kittle that Pettis probably stays fairly low owned.
Yeah, I think with Pettis, I mean, it's all about Goodwin not being there. 4,000 is a fair price for tournaments.
Yeah,
I think he dropped a touchdown pass in the first half, right? Like he had to play broken up. It wasn't like an ugly wide open drop, but it was a pass broken up sort of drop. It looks like he's got a pretty good rapport already with Garoppolo.
Yeah, I was impressed by what they saw. He did have the touchdown in the second half. So I think if Goodwin's out, I think he's definitely a way to save some money. Moving on to a really, really good game. We have New England headed to Jacksonville. Interesting game in that, usually we love the New England offense, but facing this Jacksonville defense will be tough. New England's favored by 1.5, over under 45. What are you thinking on the New England offense? Usually we just kind of avoid everybody going to Jacksonville. Obviously, they're more explosive than most offenses. Are you interested in a super low percentage Tom Brady or anything like that?
A little bit. I mean, I think especially on DraftKings, 6,500 is a really nice price there. You could pair him up with Gronk and, maybe you end up being just fine. Gronk creates matchup nightmares for even good defenses. So, I think it's interesting because anytime you get the Patriots a second look at a defense in a reasonably small amount of time as far as NFL game weeks are concerned, that kind of creates a potential advantage for Belichick, and it's easy to look past that. So I do like the idea of getting him low-owned. Maybe 1 in 5 lineups I could see pairing Brady with Gronk this week. Looking at the running game, I still don't trust Burkhead. I know with Jeremy Hill going down, that may have changed how much they used him last week. So I don't really like that setup a lot. Maybe they dumped the ball off to James White a lot to kind of keep the Jags pass rush more honest. But there's not a whole lot that I like this week. I mean, Philip Dorsett's kind of interesting beyond week 2. I don't think I'm playing him this week, even though the price is still pretty low. It's kind of Brady and Gronk or nothing for me from the Patriots offense.
Yeah, I would normally love going back to Chris Hogan. He played a lot of snaps. He had 5 targets, but only 1 catch. But he's going to get a lot of Jalen Ramsey. Dorsett's going to see a lot of A.J. Bouye. Those guys may guard Gronk some, too. But interesting situation in the backfield. Rex Burkhead actually went in the concussion protocol today, so that could be an interesting situation. Obviously, Jeremy Hill's out. Sony Michel, we don't know what we're really getting there yet, and he might not even play. Kenyon Barner kind of sucks. They might use him a lot. If they're trying to avoid going against Ramsey and Bouye and they're doubling Gronk, if Burkhead doesn't play, I think James White at 5,900 on FanDuel becomes super interesting.
Yeah, might get a few more carries than usual, and we'll see if they bring somebody else up onto the roster to possibly contribute.
Where's Jonas Gray when you need him?
Oh, he's sleeping.
Yeah, he was. He had that one big game, and then he was gone. But yeah, I think White's probably my favorite guy in this offense if Burkhead is out.
Yeah, that would change things a little bit for me. But if Burkhead plays, I think that share is one where I'm just staying away. And you know, Brady Gronk is the way to go for me.
What about the Jacksonville offense? You know, they're going to have to score a little bit more than usual because, you know, New England's going to score some points. Leonard Fournette is questionable with that hamstring injury. He'll be low percentage at 7,700 on FanDuel, but you know, Hammy scared the hell out of me, especially with a running back. You know, he could make one cut and a tweak and suddenly you're looking at a zero. Are you interested in all at a low percentage Fournette, or are you just kind of staying away with that hamstring?
Yeah, staying away because of the hamstring. They've said he could play even if he doesn't practice all week, but you still wonder if he plays and gets his usual share of the touches. TJ Yeldon's at least a competent sort of backup. And I look at the pass catchers, I see nothing there to get excited about. We know the Patriots can often scheme and take one key weapon away. Probably would be Keelan Cole in this case, so maybe that makes D.D. Westbrook a little more appealing. But I don't like this setup at all for the Jags. Even though they're at home, I think they could be in a lot of trouble if Fournette's compromised or if Fournette doesn't play at all.
Yeah, you look at the Jacksonville receivers, like you said, it's kind of just split around. You know, Keelan Cole led with 32 snaps, but had four targets. Dee had six targets. So I think I just like other receivers more in that range. And they're going to have to throw and they're going to have to score some. But I don't think there's anybody that jumps out to me as like, I got to play that guy.
Nah, it's just the makeup of that roster. You know, they don't have that prototypical number one receiver anymore. It's kind of a mess all over the place.
Yeah, a lot depends on if Fournette plays. If he plays, you know, Belichick's going to scheme to take him out. If not, he'll probably, you know, like you said, maybe scheme to take Cole and Westbrook out. But, yeah, I don't know. Fournette could be interesting, but hamstrings scare me too much, I think.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep with you.
Last game on the Sunday main slate is the Raiders, who we talked about earlier, that really, you know, kind of laid the egg against the Rams in the second half. Going to Denver. Denver's favored by 5.5. They are at home, over under a 46. Marshawn Lynch was really bad last year against Denver. He had 26 carries for 67 yards in one game, 9 carries for 12 yards in the other. He's dealing with a little bit of a shoulder injury. The interesting guy in the Raiders offense was Jared Cook, 12 targets week one. They just kept feeding him. He was kind of the guy. They weren't throwing the ball to Amari Cooper. No other receivers really stepping up. It was a lot of Cook in the second half. Kind of interesting just because, you know, Seattle had a no-name tight end last week, just killed Denver for over 100 yards. Are you going back to Jared Cook at all at 5,000 on FanDuel?
I mean, the Will Disley thing was a pretty nice surprise in week one.
Yeah.
I was even more surprised that Cook was heavily involved because it came at the expense of Amari Cooper and Jordy Nelson. Those guys were both very quiet in the opener. I'm not going back to Cook. I know it's cheap. It's easy to do it, and it's not going to hurt you if you pay up and he has a quiet game even. You can make up that production and still cash in tournaments potentially. But I think if I'm doing anything with the Raiders, it's Amari Cooper at 6,600. And even that, I think I'm taking more of the wait-and-see approach with this Raiders offense. Kind of want to see what the next couple of weeks bring for Derek Carr. He's a little bit banged up coming out of that opener, too. So, you know, I think he's, like, practicing or wasn't listed on the injury report. But general soreness is what they were saying he had coming out of that game. Yeah. I'm not really a believer in him. I want a reason to believe in the Oakland offense before I invest.
I had general soreness watching him throw interceptions with no receivers within 15 yards.
I don't blame you. I went to sleep.
Smart call. The Denver offense is actually really intriguing to me. I was surprised with, you know, how open they were with the offense. Case Keenum just locked in on Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. He had 11 targets for Sanders, 10 for Demaryius Thomas. You know, he had 320 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did throw 3 picks, but, you know, in fantasy, I don't think we really care about that too much, especially in DFS. You know, season long, you lose some points for that. But if they're going to sling it around that much, I like them going against the Raiders. I think Case Keenum's kind of an interesting under-the-radar play this week that might, with Mahomes and Ben Roethlisberger getting a lot of ownership, I wonder if Keenum slides through and could be a really interesting tournament play.
Yeah, and you could pair him with Sanders or Thomas pretty affordably and with that have extra money to pay up maybe for some top running backs, so I do like the angle here. I don't think the Raiders are good. I don't think the John Gruden thing is going to work. I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. And I'm surprised that Denver's offense isn't priced up more. If you say, you know what, they're going to be up. They're going to be running the ball a lot. Royce Freeman is 4,300. I know Philip Lindsay had the bigger game last week, but the usage was pretty similar, right? So yes. I don't really see Philip Lindsay as a real like ongoing threat to Royce Freeman. I see Freeman as the better back in the Denver backfield. Love the discount you're getting on him this week.
Yeah, I mean, he still had 15 carries last week, so he was still really involved. I think Freeman's interesting too. He's 6,000 on FanDuel, so he is a little bit higher priced there. But you know, I think you're going to get a super low percentage on Freeman, maybe the lowest percentage he'll be all year against a defense. It doesn't scare me with a really good game script. If they take they take the lead, which I think they will, he could be an interesting second half guy. They really kind of lean on.
Yeah, I could see Freeman being a guy that's like 5,500 on DraftKings a week from now, being among the biggest price surgers between week two and week three.
Yeah, I like that play too. And we mentioned pairing Keenan with a receiver. If I'm going to do it, I think I'm going to do it with Demaryius Thomas. He's a little more expensive than Sanders. I think Sanders will be way more popular. He caught 10 balls, but they both had the same number of targets. I think if you're going to go in a tournament, I think Thomas is a better way to go. I think he'll be way lower owned at a little bit of higher price. If I'm going to pair someone with Keenan, it's going to be DT for me.
Yeah, I like that too. He's cheaper on DraftKings than Sanders, but yeah, they're kind of funny. They're flipped. But I'd still play Thomas on DraftKings as well at 5,600. I like that price a ton. No reservations at all. I think the difference between Thomas and Sanders is minimal. I actually still expect Thomas to be the slightly more productive player over the course of this season. But both may have been underdrafted in season-long leagues, and both are underpriced right now in DFS.
If I'm going away from one of the LA defenses, we talked about the Chargers and the Rams. I do like the Denver defense. They had 6 sacks last week and 3 turnovers against Seattle, who's you know Russell Wilson's a good quarterback. You know, obviously they're not the same team they were, but they really looked good, especially at home. Von Miller looked like he was hair on fire. He was everywhere. Oakland are really vulnerable to turnovers against the Rams. Carr was throwing the ball all over the yard. I mean, especially when there weren't guys close by. I think if you want to avoid the Chargers, who would be the highest percentage, the Rams might be the second highest. I think Denver at 4,500 maybe slips in a little bit lower than they should be. An interesting kind of a pivot from those two LA defenses.
Yeah, they'd kind of be a top three, top four defense for me. So I'm with you on the Broncos as well. I think especially at home, that is a nasty defense. They can rush the passer effectively. Von Miller being completely healthy right now is huge for them. And the secondary is still good enough to pick up those turnovers. And we know Derek Carr is good enough to make terrible decisions and kind of prop up a defense a little bit too.
Yeah, no doubt there. I think I'm going to be overweight on the Denver D. I really like them to make some plays this week. We don't really hit the Sunday night game. It's not on the main slate on either site. But is there anybody in the Giants Dallas game that if you do play the full slate on Sunday that really jumps out to you? Obviously, Odell Beckham looked really good against Jacksonville, but you know, Eli Manning missed him on a couple times. It should have been touchdowns. I was a little frustrated with that. He had one ball where if he just leads him to the left, it's an easy touchdown. He threw it over his head. But I thought Beckham looked great. I thought Sterling Shepard looked good. I think that we talked about last week that Evan Ingram's going to lose a lot of targets with those two guys healthy. That definitely happened. Anybody that you're really jumping out to this game? Anything that you want to talk about in the Giants in Dallas?
Nothing. Nothing crazy. I mean, Barkley looked good on that longer run, kind of got bottled up by the Jags last week. I think he'll look a lot better. Yeah, I mean, no hesitation with Barkley at all going up against Dallas. I want to see – here's what I want to see. I want to see Dallas figure something out through the air because they were horrendous at throwing the ball in their opener.
Yes. And a lot of people are ripping on Dak, but I tell you what, he has nobody to throw the ball to right now.
No, it's one of the worst wide receiver groups we've seen in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, when Allen Hurns is your number one, and he's had some moments with Jacksonville where he was pretty good, and Michael Gallup has a little bit of promise, but, you know, right now with where they are, with Hurns is one and Gallup kind of there, I mean, it's just, there's nothing there. Cole Beasley is probably their best receiver right now, but he's an underneath guy. You know, I think he had 8 catches last week, but what do you think about Ezekiel Elliott kind of as a fantasy guy going forward? Are you worried with how bad their pass offense is that he's just going to stack the crap out of the box every week?
Yeah, I mean, he saw a lot of that last year, and I think that's what dragged the efficiency down. And the way my draft slots worked, I didn't end up with Zeke anywhere this year. I thought the volume would go up, you know, just by not having a suspension and everything, and maybe he'd still be a little more effective as a pass catcher and make up some ground there. But I had some concerns about the Dallas offense coming into the season, and I think they've been warranted.
Absolutely agreed there. Anybody else you want to talk about? We've gone a little bit long here, but I think we covered the games pretty well. Anybody else you want to talk about? Any other plays that we haven't mentioned that you are popping your head?
Not at this point. So if I missed any, I'll fire them out there on Twitter @DerekVanRiper.
Beautiful. And I am at Scott Jenstead. Thanks again for listening to the RotoWire NFL DFS podcast for week two. We do appreciate that. Again, follow us on Twitter. Hit us up with questions there. Anything you want us to address with the podcast moving forward, any ideas, comments, we would love to hear those. Again, if you could please rate or review the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate that too. Other than that, hope everybody has a great week too. Hopefully we get some good games. That Chiefs Steelers game and the Patriots Jags game should be a lot of fun. So hopefully we have a good football weekend. Hope everybody takes care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.